So, for those people who are not aware of this, how to do, this is different. Normally what we do is where I introduce the topic and then we go around the room and everybody puts in their 2 cents worth and it's a joy. This is different. The reason why is that I have never done the full lecture series to completion of how to be an effective top. This is for everybody. This is for tops, bottoms, switches, whatever. The purpose of this talk is to share information that I've learned and to get your feedback and get your wisdom shared too, to get the topic going. The reason why this is important, for those of you who have not been here last week, we don't have enough tops to go around. The ones that we have are not particularly confident. They are worried, they're insecure, they're constantly hoping for, you know, little dribbles and drabbles of information, but it's sort of like learning how to swim by reading a book. You can do it, but it's not fun. Mostly we learn the hard way, and it's discouraging, and it's hard for the ego, and our egos are not at our best all the time anyway. So what I've been doing is that I'm going to be covering a different aspect of it. Last week was the intro. Today, the topic is nonverbal communication, and this covers a lot of ground. This is not a common topic. I'm sure if you go onto Google, you're not going to see a lot of, you know, web pages all about nonverbal communication for gay leathermen. I'm going to, okay? Where am I getting this information? I'm getting this information from 37 years plus being in the gay leathermen's community, two, from having played with literally multiple thousands of men in my life. I was very active when I was younger. I've slowed down a lot, but I still do a lot of playing with a lot of people. But what I did in the early days, especially back in the 70s, is I was asked people, after I'd play with them, how could I have made this better? And they would teach me. And I learned from some incredible, wonderful sexual athletes back in the 70s, and then they died. But I didn't. So I stuck around, and I'm here, and the things that I learned from all of my mentors and all my playmates are the things that I will be sharing. I will be opening up for discussion. I will be opening it up for questions, for comments, for corrections, whatever the heck occurs to you. We're going to be doing some show and tell tonight. But however it goes, you'll notice that I won't be working too much from notes. I'm not really interested in doing a lot of reading the PowerPoint slides to you. I'm just going to talk. So if I tend to wander a little bit, try and help me get back on topic. If I forget to finish something, say, what were you going to finish about that? Please tell me. Support me in that, okay? Because this just is my style. So let's talk about the history of nonverbal communication. In the gay leathermen's, I'll call it gay leathermen's, but gay fetish men is the real term now because we're all not just into leather. Now we got the puppies, now we got the furries, now we've got the spandex, now we've got the, you know, the latex, now we've got a lot of stuff that didn't exist back in the early days. Well, I'm just going to speak in a generic term as far as the leather community because this is where we go back into history. Speaking as somebody who is there, as a gay man who came out as a gay man in 1975, I had no role models. We had Charles Nelson Reilly and Edward Everett Horton and Liberace as role models. And they were all objects of ridicule. They were all, you know, crying all the way to the bank because people were making fun of them. Right. The problem is that gay men who were attracted to strong masculine males didn't have a lot of voice or a lot of presence in the larger culture. Life magazine published an article where they gave lots and lots of pictures that showed a leather bar. I think it was in San Francisco. I don't have the reference with me, but if you just Google Life magazine leather bar, they have excerpts of it all over the web because it was absolutely a massive change in our culture, in the larger gay men's culture, because it showed masculine men being hypermasculine around a bunch of others. And immediately everybody went, fuck this city that I'm in or this town, I'm moving to a major city. So, boom, everybody started picking a coast and heading off to the big city. And so then, in the 70s, massive amounts of bathhouses would go up, supplemented by lots and lots of cunning little shops, and the gayborhoods really took off in every major city. and they'd have all these bars that, you know, really specialized in various things. Here in San Diego, back mid-70s to late-70s, we had 6 leather bars simultaneously in San Diego of various types, okay? That's how popular it was. Because suddenly everybody had access to hypermasculine males, and that you didn't have to pretend, where one of you didn't have to pretend to be a girl, okay? And it was a breakthrough mentally for a lot of people. The problem was all these men were moving to the big city and having this huge smorgasbord. The problem is they started getting more and more picky, saying, you know, I'm really into foot fetish, or I'm really into, you know, whatever I'm into. And if you're at, say, Wolf's on a Saturday night and there's 400 guys there, the last thing you want to do is waste 4 hours and a whole bunch of money buying drinks for a guy and then find out you're both tops and looking for the same thing, and you're not going to be happy. So what we had to do is we had to develop verbal shorthand, nonverbal shorthand. So that'll be the first part. I'm not going to go deeply into hanky codes. Pretty much every swinging dick in this room has heard it or seen the hanky codes online. And frankly, the vast majority of hanky codes are bullshit. I'm not going to walk into any place on earth with a white handkerchief with gold polka dots on it because I'm not going to find what I'm looking for. I'm just not. People are going to say, the whole evening, people will come up to me and say, what does that mean? And I'll tell them, and they say, oh, okay. And they'll wander away. So what is the point? So, I mean, if you are visiting in a strange city, or if you're not well known in your current city, it's a great way of communicating. Okay, somebody yell out what light blue means.
Tiffany and Company.
Thank you. That's our Timothy. Yeah. Okay, so one more time. What is light blue?
Sucking. Yeah.
Sucking, yes. Okay, now I've said this before, but in the early days of this tribal communication, the West Coast and the East Coast were off from each other. Where on the East Coast for a while, if you were a top, you flagged on the right. And it confused too many people, and finally everybody just gave up and went with the West Coast style, which is tops wear it on the left, and bottoms wear it on the right. So we've got all the standards. We've got the yellow. We've got the red. We got the dark blue. We got the light blue. We got the Kelly green for daddy and boy. We got all that other stuff. We got the black for the, you know, the kink and the hardcore. We got all sorts of different stuff. Well, that was just the bare minimum. Village people. Let's talk about village people. What was the point? The village people were directly reflecting what was going on in major gay culture at the time. We were all doing our best to pursue hypermasculine male archetypes. An archetype is the perfect example of that particular thing. Let's say Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the early 70s was the architect of bodybuilder. And he became very trendy, and everybody wanted to be like him, and everybody started hitting the gyms, and a lot of gyms went into business suddenly that were never there before. Okay, that never really stopped. Okay, now a lot of us really want to look muscular. Okay, well, an archetype might have been a lumberjack, so people would show up wearing flannel shirts with the sleeves rolled up, and the, you know, the red kerchief at the neck, and the tight blue pants, and the tight blue jeans, and the big, you know, butch boots, and all that other stuff, because it symbolized what you were attracted to and how you felt attractive as a hypermasculine male. And we could name a zillion of them. Matter of fact, why don't we go ahead and put that out there? Like, okay, just as an example, we have a wrestling singlet. Okay, this one I'm borrowing from downstairs. But these are taking off like crazy and selling like crazy. You can buy them in latex. You can buy them in, you know, neoprene. You can buy them with the ass cut out. You can buy them, you know, in all sorts of different ways. What are some of the other very masculine male archetypes? Somebody yell it out.
Cowboys,
wrestling, yes,
construction,
biker, yes, military, cop, okay, and these are all, you know, there's no surprise in any of this. In my own particular case, I like uniform gear. In the state of, my, that's heavy, yeah, I'll let the boys pick that up. Okay, now this is not specifically anything military. It is a uniform type of shirt that I bought at California Uniform. What is the point? I like to look authoritative, and I like to think that I carry it well. In the state of California, since around 2002, it has been a $1,000 misdemeanor to wear a California insignia for police or firefighters or anything like that that relates to the state of California. So when you see guys strutting around in CHP uniforms, you might want to let them know that they don't want to do that in front of a cop because they will get a ticket. Okay. The reason why the law changed is because right after, no, it wasn't 2002. Yeah. Yes. It was right after 9/11. And there were a lot of guys in who were feeling very cocky in the police and fire departments because they were in, you know, they were at the top of the heap and they started throwing their weight around saying, we don't like these fags ridiculing us by wearing our gear, so we got to push a law through. I've never met anybody that would spend $3,000 for a full CHP uniform who is doing it to ridicule anybody. Now, the only exception to that I have found is that I can wear a full-on cop uniform in San Diego on Halloween at Nightmare on Normal Street. They won't bust you for that. They'll look at you funny, but they won't bust you. I've learned that. But anyway, so then the whole point of wearing something like this is to express I'm in charge, I'm part of a very masculine archetype, okay? Now, I'm not wearing anything in particular that is particularly California-oriented. What I do instead is that I will wear, say, State of New York corrections officer uniform. That one's a big crowd pleaser. I don't have that with me. But I have no place to put all this. I'll just start draping it over the chair. Okay, so then we're going to talk about regular vest versus bar vest. What's the difference? Okay, regular vest covers the nipples. Bar vest, oversimplifying, leaves the nipples out there where they can be seen. Very little actual vest. It's more of a symbol of a vest than an actual vest. The reason why is because you want to leave people having access to your nips. You want to show off your pecs. That's nice. For us tall guys, it's a bit of a problem because I'm exactly at the right height for me to be talking to people. Someone taps me on the shoulder. I say, pardon me. I turn my head to the side, and somebody will lean over and bite me every fucking time. So you don't see me doing that a lot in bars anymore because they find it irresistible. Anyways, now let's talk about harnesses. Okay. Ron, why don't you stand up? Okay. Pardon me? Yeah, why don't you take your vest off? Okay, to pop this arm through here, head through here. Now, the secret of a harness. This is something I learned decades ago. Always take it off the same way, every time, without fail, without any doubt. The reason why is because a lot of times, especially the more complicated ones, you'll take it off, and then when you want to put it back on again, you can't figure out how. Okay? So I always undo it on this side. Okay, so what is the point of a harness? Yes, please model for us, Vanna. All right, there you go. So what is... Yeah. So, yes, and then two steps back and a snap. Okay, so anyway, so what we've got here is we're showing off the epitome of masculinity with a harness. Why am I talking about this? Because this says I'm the real deal. Fakers tend not to wear the more intensive stuff. Now, obviously nowadays we have plenty of guys who are into the fashion aspect of leather, and that's fine. You have to go through phases. I don't object to people wearing fashion leather, such as harnesses or armbands or wristbands. The reason why is because the same guy who is wearing leather now, when he reaches midlife crisis, is suddenly going to start living leather, and that's where we get a lot of our new members. So that's fine. But what we're doing is we're showing off the fact that he is manifestly not female. We're showing off these big, strong muscles up here. We're showing off the big, strong fucking shoulders. These are not bitch tits. These are big fucking armor-plated pectorals right here. He is a masculine male, and he's showing it off. Lift and separate, you know, with the tits, whatever it is that we're showing. But we're showing off when he turns around and we see this big, broad back. And it's framed by this beautiful, let's see if it's still running, by the harness, okay? What we're doing is we're communicating. No recording. It is. All right. I'm going to put it in my pocket. Probably safer. Okay. So then, Then we bring out the armband. Okay. Obviously, we choose which arm carefully. Okay. Run. Yes, with our run, we don't have to guess. Again, so let's talk about the armband. What is it that we are doing with this armband? We're wearing it to show off the difference between these big, strong fucking shoulder muscles and the big, bulging biceps and triceps. We are clearly identifying ourselves as liking the fact that we are a fit male. We're showing off our masculine fitness, okay? Very nonverbal, but it's coming across very clearly. Someone like this struts into the bar, you know he has intentionality. He is the real deal, and he's got his shoulders back, and he's got his head up, and he's feeling cocky. Okay? He's a beautiful man, and everything that he's wearing shows off his masculine attributes. Okay? We can do different things. We can have, I mean, let's say, somebody who has a single-tail whip on his left side, on his belt, in a crowded bar, if he's a poser, he will be scorned. See, that's the fear that people have. They worry that if they get something, are people going to make fun of them behind their back? That's why we're having this discussion. Everyone here, at some point, has gone into a leather bar for the very first time. And you think about that, about all the signals that were flying around past you, that you never could figure out why people were reacting to in these wacky ways. Because they were thinking that you had intentionality in what you were wearing, and they were reacting in that way or something like that. And so then, thank you very much. Why don't you, you just look beautiful like that. Why don't we just keep it that way for a while? All right. Yes, that's right. Model for us. So then clearly there's been a lot of new changes in terms of, you know, there's now leg harnesses that attach and, you know, go, and all that. And it's all different variations on the same thing. The sore topic, by far, is the master's cap. Okay. I have written a lot of editorials on this very topic. Some of you have already read them, so you already know my opinion on the topic. I said, let's take a 10-year moratorium on picking on people and let people get their damn master's cap and grow into the role because that's their intention. If they're doing it to be silly or fun, then it's not going to work very well and they'll give up after a while. But if somebody really, really, really sees themselves as a sir, I say let's cut them some slack and allow them to wear the hat instead of saying, oh, no, you must earn it. Frankly, there's not enough tops out there, experienced ones, who are willing to sign off on the new guys. So fuck them. They don't get a vote. If they don't have skin in the game, they don't get to choose who gets to wear a master's cap, unless that person is dishonoring in some way that I can't imagine, but, you know. There you go. Somebody intentionally is using it as a joke or something. Like I said, you know, pretty soon public disapproval will get through to them. The reason why I bring this up, I've been through a lot. I've been through decades and decades of experience. I've been through the flames as a gay man. And I now am a 57-year-old man who is surrounded by large amounts of people who are younger, who are ready. Or new and are ready. And if we're constantly making them jump through flaming hoops before we'll allow them to be one of us, then it just means we're a clique. And it means we don't give a fuck about anybody except the people who we consider to be attractive. Yes?
You can't control market factors either. I'm sorry. Anybody can go buy a hat.
Yep.
They don't understand what somebody historically thinks is important about it or not, and they don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. They can afford it. Somebody else can't. Who cares?
Yep.
You know, so why not let them live whatever persona they want? I don't get that at all.
I can understand that, and I agree with you more than probably anybody else.
I agree. You can't control it.
The only times that it frustrates people, in my experience, is if the person in charge is, let's say, intentionally wearing a master's cap and a lacy, frilly garment, and doing that a lot just to think because they want to be doing gender fuck or something. And after a while, people just stop taking them seriously as a human being, so that can be a problem. But as far as the symbolism of wearing the master's cap, it doesn't get much more intensive than that as a symbol in our culture. And the reason why I'm bringing this stuff up is because leather, and I will say that phrase even though we have many other manifestations, but leather, as I was told by Sterling of West Hollywood, the gentleman who invented assless chaps for gay men, He was one of my early mentors, and he told me that leather is just a frame for the picture within. If the frame's, you know, great, but the picture's no good, it's not doing much good. That you have to be confident inside yourself. You have to know that what you're wearing is what you really want to wear, and it makes your dick hard. And that's really what we want to communicate. Let's not worry about anything that I've said as being the only way, because it's not the only way. People all have their different opinions. But the reason why I'm sharing these things is because I want people to understand that it really does come down to what is it that makes you feel good about yourself. Because that's what people want to see. If I'm wearing a master's cap in public, it means I'm in that kind of mood. It means that I mean it, that I am the real fucking deal, and I'm wearing it with all sorts of pride, and I'm a cocky son of a bitch. My goal is to get to as many other guys to that point as possible, whatever you are, whether you're a bottom or a switch or a slave or whatever. As long as you feel sexy in it, then that's what 2013 is about. Yes, there's symbolism in things that we wear, but I'm not real strict on protocol, and I tend to agree with you that the problem is that we've used protocol as a stick to beat people with. I say, let's play. Let's be more joyful. Let's be more, you know, let's be more authentic. Because what it is, like for instance, what I'm wearing right now, okay, I'm wearing hiking boots and, you know, almost knee socks with the red kilt. I call it my Catholic schoolgirl kilt. I've got four of them. You know, with a t-shirt that says Folsom Street Fair and a vest, a leather vest and a black hat with a Butchman's emblem on it. It's in no way, is nothing that I'm wearing had anything, well, except for the vest, had anything at all really to do with what was going on back in the 70s. But we've changed. We've developed. People can tell, I promise. If I walk into a restaurant, people are going to know that something's different and that what I'm wearing, I mean it. They may not understand the symbolism. Like, for instance, I went to L.A. Leather Pride a few months back, and I'm in full head-to-toe leather. I'm ready. I'm doing the full-on Tom of Finland gear. And I'm frustrated because I can't find the place where this place that we were supposed to be at. Google Maps was lying to me. So I'm trying to reach people on the phone to find out where this place actually is. It was off like 3 miles. But anyway, so I'm standing there on the sidewalk on Sunset Boulevard, and there's all these shops. And I notice that people are poking their heads out and kind of peeking at me and then poking their heads back in and poking their heads out like a bunch of gophers. And so then I'm on the phone. One woman was staying... was poking her head out of a hair styling salon for a long time, so I smiled at her, and she came out. And immediately, everybody else whoop, came out, too, and started gathering around me. Can I have my picture taken with you? Can I? Sure, what the hell. So then, you know, I'm still trying to do the phone call and say, come on, over here, let's get the picture. Okay, one more. And then finally, everybody's satisfied, and they go back in. The reason why I bring this up, they didn't 100% understand the symbolism of everything that I was wearing, but they knew it meant something, and that I was the real deal. And they felt honored. They didn't treat me as an outcast or as a sinful person that should be shunned. They saw me as an archetype that was fun, playful, admirable, and I was so nice to them. And they said, oh, he's such a gentleman, you know, and that sort of stuff. And it cost me nothing to be nice, but I made their day. Because in the old, like, I've editorialized way too much lately. We've gone from being dirty and filthy and the worst of the worst and the scum and, you know, we should be in prison to now we're at the front of the line. I'm going to say this. I mean, I've made this point before, but I'll make it now. If I go to a trendy new restaurant that is jam-packed full of people with the big ear lobe plugs and, the purple hair and the mohawks and the neck tattoos and, it's trendoid like all belief. If I go in there in leather, I win. Because I'm the real deal, and say, oh, God, I want to be that authentic when I get to be that age. Oh, my God. That we really are now trendy. The more we express ourselves with authenticity, the more the level of civilization rises in the world, the more the people in the outer world say, you know, I'm going to have to take this guy seriously. Yes, Timothy.
You want to talk trendy. Harvard University has their first pink club. on campus now, with faculty advisor, the entire thing. They have a kinky club at Harvard.
Yeah.
We've reached Harvard.
Yeah. Well.
Openly reached Harvard.
Oh, yeah. No apologies. No apologies. Because of Mr. Internet, we have 18-year-olds marching into the crypt on their 18th birthday, and they already know all the details and all of the different distinctions between the different types of floggers and what they're good for. We've reached that amount of information. But what still maintains is that people want to know that we're still around. They really do. Gay leathermen, gay fetish men, are a very powerful archetype in the larger culture. Yes, you're going to get ninnies that say, oh, village people. And that's fine. That's all they know. But for the larger population, a lot of people know of us, and they want to know that we're okay, that we didn't all die. So let's get back to the main point. I tend to wander. I know I do. So let's get back to nonverbal communication. So we've got all sorts of different stuff. I own an executioner's hood. Okay, we've got the hood, we've got the eye holes, and it's very intensive. I need to give it away. I really do. This one belongs to Pleasures and Treasures. I'm going to be returning it. The reason why is because I can't wear it with intentionality. I can show up, very good, I can show up and I'll be wearing it and I'll scare the fuck out of everybody and I'll throw shade and nobody will come intentionally within 10 feet of me until I see somebody that I know and the big smile, I go, oh, hi, honey. Totally fucks up the image, okay? You know, I can't carry it off for long. You know, I'm just too, I don't know. I can't be that intensive in a public situation. It's just not me. So, our intention is to be able to attract people in social circumstances. The point of Fetishman San Diego is to create an ongoing, continuous flood of social circumstances so that people can practice their social skills. That includes nonverbal communication. That includes cruising. That includes being able to, you know, check to see how sexy you are to other people. It's all about external validation. There's nothing wrong with that. The only time external validation is a problem is when that's all you've got. You've seen the guys who get all muscled up and they get every hair tweezed and they get everything just so, and they show up at public events and, you know, they see the people, you know, they come in groups so they can check out, you know, the reaction that everybody's getting, and they say, oh yeah, this guy over there is really checking you out, and then they leave. Okay, that's not a complete communication, because they tend to go home and jack off because they're lonely, because they don't get laid, because they're too busy using the rest of us as external validation, but have no idea how to actually connect with us on any other level. And it's a shame. I know a lot of guys like that, and I'm sure you do too. And I'm putting a lot of judgment on that, I admit that. But there's more to life than external validation, but it's nice to have it. Okay? What I do as a man who wants to, let's say, get action quickly, I have to consciously use nonverbal communication. For instance, I have drawers full of shirts. Okay, this one that I'm holding up says Power Top. Very popular. Okay, this one you can buy here locally, made by a local company. Big red shirt that says fucker in big black letters. This is the one that if I'm wearing this and I wander into the bathroom, five guys will follow me. So it's going to be making it very popular. So why would I do such a thing? Because again, I'm consciously using nonverbal communication. If you see a t-shirt online, let's say you see a picture of a cute guy and he's wearing a great shirt that says tag team leader. You go, oh, that's just right for me. You Google it. You look up tag team leader shirt, and there it is, and you buy it. You know, they're everywhere. You know, they're in porn all over the place saying, oh, you got to check out this great thing on this Tumblr site. Well, that's where you get these things. But the reason why is because, again, it's nonverbal shorthand. Okay, so let's leave the clothes entirely out of it. Nonverbal communication. One of the things that I had as a problem when I was first getting into the whole cruising scene was that nobody would look at me as a tall top. I would go into Wolf's on a very, very busy night, and I'd walk through the crowd, and nobody would look at me. I'd smile. I have great social skills. I would do everything I could to break through. Nothing. Why? Well, the next time I went in, I brought in a buddy of mine, and I had him walk 3 feet behind me as I went through the bar. I said, so what did you see? They said, oh, God, everybody's looking at you. Really? He says, yeah, they wait until you pass, and then they stare. But this brings up the concept of what I call tableau, T-A-B-L-E-A-U. Just like when you go to the Museum of Natural History and it's got, you know, a diorama of a bunch of stuffed lions, you know, with the glass eyes and they growl, you know, they don't move and they're covered in dust. That's the impression that I have if people don't know who I am and I'm going into a crowded bar. Because people will pose waiting for me to choose them. And it doesn't do any good. Because I'm not getting any signals. And when I lack information, I get discouraged. So what I have to do is I have to do something to break the ice. One thing that I do to break the ice is I don't wear a whole bunch of fucking leather. Because if I'm fully geared up, nobody goes near me. One thing, I'm 6'5", 270 pounds. A little bit of me goes a long way, and there's a lot of me. Okay? If I am geared up from head to toe, I look about 9 foot tall and about 6 foot wide, and I throw shade. And that's not the impression I'm really looking for. It's off-putting to people. That's why I break it up by wearing stuff that's not so traditional. That's why I wear stuff that's a little provocative and allows people to do what I call the cute puppy approach. So like if you're at the park and you're walking a cute puppy and everybody says, oh, that is the cutest puppy, it's not the puppy they're talking about. They're using what I call social grease, which is a way to initiate a conversation. As a tall man, as a very tall man, I used to get very pissed off that people would come up to me and say, wow, you're so tall. I'd say, oh, isn't there something more you can talk about? I was getting very frustrated until I realized they had no other way to initiate a conversation with the tall top. And it was all they could think of. It was okay. Forgive them. Let it be. That if they're coming up to you and saying something inane, it's on the same level as somebody saying, wow, heaven must be missing an angel because you're here tonight. I mean, it's a terrible line, but what else are you going to say when you don't know any better? You know, forgive people for being clumsy. They want very badly to show you attention, but they don't know how to do it in a smooth and groovy way that would be most attractive to somebody who is attractive to them. What I've learned, you know, I'm segueing off here again. But I've learned that if somebody comes up to me and says, wow, how tall are you? I will always have a clever rejoinder, but not in a way that makes them look wrong. I'll say, well, without these boots on, I'm only 5'17", but only when standing fully erect, or something like that. But you have to allow them the grace of being able to at least get the contact going, even if you're not attracted to them, to be able to let them down smoothly and take ownership of the conversation. That's a topic of another one that we'll be doing in another few weeks. Anyways, moving on. So, in nonverbal communication, if somebody is, let's see. Well, I'm going to open it up for discussion so far because we've got a lot more to cover, and let's just cover this now. Who here has successfully cruised somebody using no words whatsoever and been able to attract them to you? Okay, let's hear some stories.
Being in the rodeo, when I'm all dressed up, my cowboy here, everyone, being the rodeo director, I had people come up and they were like looking at me and I found someone that I liked and it was just gestures and looking and got them to say, okay. And kind of hard to explain, put me on the spot here. was just how I carried myself and they said that they wanted something and then they just, how they followed me around, like, not like as a puppy, but like as a kid. They wanted to say, hey, I want to follow you because I want to be around you and then I want to do something later on with you.
Very good. Because you were being a cowboy archetype, weren't you?
Yeah.
Got it. Please.
I guess I wasn't so much successfully cruising, or maybe I was. I went to a clothing option resort with a friend of mine, and he was trying to show me around, and I noticed by the fourth or fifth room that we got to, that there was a gentleman that would go to the room with us. And then as soon as he came in, we walked to see the next room. And then finally the guy just walks up and puts my face in his crotch. And so that was completely nonverbal.
And that worked well for you.
Oh, yes.
Duly noted. All right, who else? I saw hands over here. Yes.
When I used to work at the barracks, I was bar backing, and it was a uniform night or something, and I saw someone in full as a, I don't even remember what kind of uniform it was really fucking hot in it, and we're still friends. But I was walking, and I was trying to work, and I kept going by him, and I'm like, damn, I kept finding myself going back to him. Like, it was a magnet, like, I couldn't go away, and I was trying to work, and I'm like, shit, this is getting annoying. So I finally just went up to him and grabbed him and made out with him and ended up taking him home.
Nice.
Just because of that, it just felt like the energy and just the confidence he had.
Could you talk more about what he was wearing and what it was that you saw as being confident?
Well, he was wearing a full uniform. You could definitely tell he was confident in it. He didn't really, he was cocky, but he wasn't unapproachable. He was smoking a cigar as well, so it was really hot. Just had a really good look, really good attitude. He had a lot of people around him that were drawn to him, so that's a big turn on as well. There's just a lot of different things that I try to pay attention to, so it was different, you know, just especially in a group like that. You know, the barracks was really busy that night, so for someone to stand up, you know, it takes a lot. So it was good, very, very attractive, very, very sexual.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Someone else? I saw hands. All right. Yes.
I was just going to say, one thing I used to do is I would make eye contact with people in places, clubs, bars, wherever. And if eye contact was too long, I would get nervous and I would look away. Mm-hmm. And sort of shy away. And not. Now I'm challenging myself to continue the eye contact a little longer and then smile and try to go and be more approachable rather than being too nervous and then I just look away. So just these little things I do that make a big difference in being approachable and going to people and talking to people and making connections and whatnot.
Very good. Thank you. Now I'm going to go slightly off track. I'm going to talk about permission giving. This is for the tops in the room. Okay. Thing I discovered decades ago is that the vast majority of people do not give themselves permission to have a good time. They wait for someone else to ring the bell and say it's time. I'm that guy. For decades, I have consciously been that guy. I'm going to use an illustrative point and a story that several people in this room have heard way too many times. Well, they're going to hear it again. This story is called The Perfect Technique for Having Sex with a Cult Model. Okay? Now, every word of what I'm about to say is true, and it actually happened about 18 times. And each time with a different cult model. And in every case, it showed up exactly the way that I'm describing. You have my word of honor. But it illustrates the larger point. I'm going to use it as a parable. Okay. I used to work out at a gym up in Silver Lake. It's still there, called Bodybuilders. And it was just down the street from Colt Studios photography studio, where they did a lot of their photography back in the 70s. They had a reciprocity agreement with the gym that the models could come down to the gym and get a photo shoot pump, build up their muscles. And I was going to college at the time. I had a lot of time on my hands, so I was going to the gym six times a week. And I'd spot today's prey. Okay? Picture some really fucking gorgeous man. Okay? You're all familiar with cult models, I'm sure. And so then he would be by himself because he's just there to work out, and I'd watch him, and I would wait until I caught his eye, where I'd be looking at him. I'd just stare at him, no expression on my face at all. And he'd look up, and he'd see me look at him. I'd kind of nod like this, and then he'd look down, and he'd look back up, and I'd smile, and I'd just turn away. Then I would wait until he went over to the preacher curl machine, where you're sitting in front of it, and you got your elbows on the bar and on the pad, and you're doing the curls. But that particular machine was right in front of the mirror, and I could walk up directly behind him, so he could only see me in the mirror, and I'd catch his eye, and I'd say, how much longer you got on your workout? He'd say, I don't know, 20 minutes? I'd say, okay, let me know when you're done. I'd just walk away. And I'd ignore him. 20 minutes later, there'd be this guy standing at my elbow, and he wouldn't have any fucking clue on what the hell to say. I'd look at him, I'd say, you all done? He'd say, yeah. How much? I'd say, okay, well, I've got about 5 minutes. Whether I had another hour and a half or not didn't matter, because now it's 5 minutes. And I would then say, why don't you head for the steam room? I'll see you there in 5 minutes. Okay. I said, go ahead. It's okay. I'd say just like that. So then I would then make a big show of going into the steam room. I'd be naked. He'd be in shorts. I'd sit across him. I'd start playing with his nipple. I'd be talking dirty. My dick going thump, 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 getting hard. And his getting hard. He's getting more and more excited. But he's worried because this guy whose face is on the cover of the different porn magazines and all this stuff, you know, he doesn't want his general public to see him being an old slut bag. And suddenly I'd say, okay, I can tell you're nervous. I said, I know exactly what to do. You do? Yeah. Well, upstairs there are two bathrooms. The one on the far end of the hall has a door that locks, and when you turn on the light, the fan comes on really loud. I said, well, I want you to wear nothing but your shorts and go up there now. Now imagine this, okay, this gorgeous fucking man that everybody in the entire place is already fully aware is there, trying to tiptoe nonchalantly through a crowded gay men's gym, trying to hide a hard-on in a pair of wet shorts. So every single time, he would do it, though. I'd go up there, I'd follow up after him, you know, after a decent interval. I'd make a big show of locking the door, and I'd slam him up against the wall and start talking dirty to him, getting him all excited and all hot. He's getting more and more excited, and I'd say, now turn around. He'd say, what? So you heard me, turn around. He'd turn around just by the grace of God, just by pure accident. I'd happen to have a little tub of lube with me. And the fact that the door used to jam and you couldn't open it or close it, well, I just happened to own a planer, you know. And I came in and I fixed it at the beginning of this whole thing, you know, months beforehand to get it ready for this. But anyways, but that's not salient to the topic. Anyways, so then I'd just start playing with his prostate, get him all excited and getting him closer and closer and everything. I'd say, okay, now back up to me. At that point, he wasn't saying what. He was saying oink, oink. Well, so then I would play with him. I'd get him. We'd both come at the same time. It was a lot of fun. He'd be all grateful and sticky, and he'd go back down and he'd finish his workout and, you know, be kind of in the mood for his photo shoot. But so then these guys travel in packs. And we used to host big fuck parties every Saturday night, and I would be so sick of sex by Monday morning, I'd be done. Like the last thing I would want, and I would walk into the gym, and here'd be all these guys, you know, hopefully dropping their handkerchiefs around me. I'd say, oh, for God's sake. I'd say, okay. And I'd go up to the first one, and I'd say, at quarter till, meet me in the locker room. I'd go up to the next one, quarter till, and I'd point at the clock, meet me in the locker room. So in the quarter, just slightly after quarter till, I would show up, and there'd be six guys in the locker room standing around looking at each other. I'd say, all right, everybody into the steam room, let's go. And I'd go in there. Nobody said, but, no, they just go. And I'd say, okay, you're the target for today. I'd say, you, get over there and start playing with his tits. You get over there and start sucking his dick. You get over there behind him. You know, he needs some dick in his ass. And I'd get them all swarming all over this guy, and I'd say, my work here is done, and I'd leave. But the point that I'm leading this up to, it has to do with giving permission. People are going to discount this. They're going to say, oh, it's because he's a tall top. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with being comfortable inside yourself and liking the way that you are already. People are willing to go along with it. They really are. This has to do with large crowds of people. You might notice that I'm pretty good at gathering large amounts of people together for various purposes. It has to do with giving permission. This applies to the tops, especially. Because people are dying for somebody to direct them. May as well be the most qualified, right, gents? That if we take the time to acknowledge that part of ourselves, where our intentions are really good, we're going to cause a really good time, it's okay to give permission. It's something that I suggest that everybody hone in their own technique, because the large amount of people are waiting for somebody to please do that. I call myself a nuclear-powered Julie the cruise director. And it all has to do with giving permission. We're going to have a monstrous fucking event this Saturday night. It's huge, and it doesn't exist, except in the power of my word. I've told people you can expect this, and I've given lots of feedback saying, guess what? It's working. It's working. We're getting better and better, and people go along with it. There's going to be a shit pile of people out there. not because I'm bribing them with money or I'm threatening them with violence, but because they know that as somebody who has credibility, who has a proven track record, that I have the best intention for what the final result will be. This relates to TOPS on a one-to-one level, too. It truly does. Because people who really, 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 really want somebody to run the show would like very much for you to show up and run the show. Not because you feel that you should, because if you're not in the mood, don't do it. But if you are in the mood, swing for the high fucking fences. Do it with all your heart, and people will come rejoicing. They truly will. So let's have some stories about permission giving. Who has something that they think would be salient to the topic? Getting a lot of blinking here. That's okay. Timothy, you were telling me a few minutes ago about something to do with how you've been interacting with this handsome young man right here, sitting between your feet. Yeah. Is it okay if he tells a little bit of stories? Because it is bragging, you know.
Oh, he can tell them.
Okay. All right. All right. So, Timothy, tell us how you ran across this gentleman right here. Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Timothy.
I'm Joe.
This is Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to hate how I met Joe.
All right, I'm waiting.
Internet.
Well, that's okay.
Because I'm an introvert. And they find me. They find me. They find me, and then, you know, it's nonverbal communication because it's all with your thumbs. And yet they get to find out every little freaking detail. And then they get kind of freaked out, and then they kind of scurry away. And then you tell them, you know, I really think you should come over. And then they come over. And then...
Yeah, you can't get rid of him, huh? Yeah. Yeah, I can see you're suffering right now.
He suffers very, very prettily. That's why he keeps getting invited back.
There you go. Very good. So then let's talk about verbal versus non-verbal communication. What's the point? This will surprise many of you, but I'm a ridiculously talkative top. Me of all people. But the reason why I do it is very important. This will be on the test, Jay. Okay. In the absence of information, our mind goes into overdrive and things tend to go wrong. If I'm going to play with somebody and I don't say anything, then their mind is going to go into overdrive and they're going to fill up the lack of information with, oh my God, he thinks my teeth are too far apart. Or, oh my God, he thinks my ass is too hairy. Or, oh my God, or whatever. Something from the past will come back in full force to make them feel insecure and worried. So what I do is that I talk too damn much. It's neither good nor bad, it's just my style. I'm not saying everybody should do this, but what I'm doing is I'm providing true information on a moment-by-moment basis. It's otherwise known as dirty talk, too. Okay? I'm going to give a perfect example of really bad dirty talk. We've all seen, you know, like, you know, really, really bad porn where, yeah, suck that big dick. Yeah, suck that big dick. All right, yeah, fuck yeah, suck that big dick. Okay. There is no eroticism to that. They're just making noises to fill the gap. But if I say, oh, man, I like what you just did, they go, oh, that's good information. I shall use that. If I say, God, I love the way you look. I wouldn't change a thing about you. They go, oh, I guess I don't have to worry that he thinks my ass is too hairy. Oh, man, that ass is just perfect. Or whatever, where I'm giving them information that is useful, that quiets down that little voice inside of our heads that causes us to become insecure and worried that we're wrong, we're broken, we're the wrong thing, whatever. But in nonverbal communication, if I'm talking to somebody from this far away and I've got my arms crossed from 4 or 5 feet away and I've got my arms crossed, it's body language that's really bad. It says, I don't trust what you're telling me. I'm actually defensive against it. I'm not really somebody that wants to be around you. Versus, please, come stand up. Okay? Okay. If I'm in physical contact with him while we talk, see, I'm not promising him a date. I'm not promising to marry him. but I'm communicating to him that I like him. I'm communicating that I'm using not just words to take care of the logical portion of the brain, I'm using physical contact to make the reptile, the unevolved portion of our brain, feel much more comfortable about things. If I'm caressing him, if I'm liking him, if I'm treasuring him, if I'm letting him know that this is fun for me. Now, by the way, big hint, if you really want to get through to somebody, scratch the middle of their back. There isn't a human being on earth that doesn't fucking love getting their back scratched. Testify, testify. So, but I'm communicating to him, but I'm also doing the very important first step. I'm establishing trust with a capital T. If he's going to be my playmate, and I've taken the time to let him know that the big scary guy is not going to break him like a twig, is actually going to, you know, relax with him and have a nice time, and likes the way he feels because he certainly can't keep his hands off of him, it's a great way to get the party started. It's a great way to put the bottom into the proper mood. It's a great way of investing in somebody. See, again, we're getting back to the concept, the difference between being just any old top and being a really high-quality top. If I take the time to invest in somebody, even if we're never going to play again, even if it's just in the bar and I'm flogging him or something like that, but I let him know that he's doing great. I give him his report card at the end of it. I say, I love this. When you did this particular thing, it was very pleasant for me. You know, and they go, oh, I learned something new. This is good information. I didn't know that was one of my attributes. I'm giving them information they can actually use. I can't think of a single circumstance where if you're speaking with authenticity and you're speaking with kindness, then why this would ever backfire on you. And this is what gives you a good reputation as a top. As I said last week, it's the easiest thing in the world to smear a top. Oh, he's a beast. Oh, everybody's going to say, well, I guess it must be true because, you know, it's in all of those damn tops to be beasts, you know, and truly it is. But see, if I take time, thank you so much. Let's hear it for our volunteers. But if I take the time to take it slow, one of the things when I'm demoing a full-on scene in front of people, like we did this months ago at my house, I did a full-on scene in front of people, and people were surprised because I was spending an awful lot of time not actually beating that guy. I was taking time to get him ready for it. I was making sure that he was getting stimulated in all sorts of different ways. It never occurred to me. Trust me. It's a winning technique. It really is. Somebody who's going to do that, he's going to get a callback. Because we want to remember that our intention is to create a power flow where it builds. Because you're getting what you're looking for. He's looking for what he's getting for, what he's looking for. He's going deeper into bottom space. You're going deeper into top space. And each time that you play, it's going to build up because you're getting to know each other better. The top, if he has the intention of learning how to play that man like a violin, is going to have a lot of fun if he finds out what makes that bottom feel really, really good. And then finds that button that really hits that pleasure spot and then jams his thumb down on it, whatever it is. But you got to have that as a goal. It doesn't happen randomly. It doesn't happen just show up if nobody is taking responsibility for the safety, well-being, and success of the space. How many times have you seen where, you know, two bottoms do not equal a top? Yes. Yeah, I'm sure you could testify to that. Yes. I'm going to sidebar for a second, and I'm going to talk about how to have a successful three-way every time without exception. I learned this one a long time ago. Okay? It has to do with somebody taking responsibility. If you just show up and things happen randomly with everybody just kind of, you know, wishy-washying around like a bunch of, you know, jellyfish, then nothing much is going to happen. In the absence of information, people are going to get tied up in knots inside their own heads. Their insecurities are going to show up. Oh, I knew it. He's more attracted to the other one. That does it. You know, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. We've all had things crash and burn. But if somebody is taking the time to set it up properly, I'll give a perfect example. This is back in the days when my husband and I used to do three-ways, back shortly after we first met. And we did a lot of them because my policy is what sweetheart wants, sweetheart gets. It's a good policy. It's a very good one. Well, so let's say we went over to Kickers for Country Western Night. And we'd be dancing together, and, you know, we're a very close couple and everything. But he'd say, oh, God, look at that cowboy over there. I'd say, which one? Just point him out and say, what do you like about him? Oh, I love this, and I love that. I'd say, oh, nice. I'd say, I'll be right back. I'd go over to that cowboy, and I'd bring him on over. And we'd be talking, and, you know, I'd be kind of fondling him and making him feel good. And I'd say, honey, help me with this. And we'd be, you know, starting to do it and, you know, getting him. And then I'd say, okay, let's all head over to my place. Really? Yeah, let's go. Well, the situation is fraught with terrible possibilities. I mean, the cowboy might be, you know, full, quite a bit shorter than me. I'm a big monstrous beast. He doesn't know me. He doesn't know my intentions. I could be the jealous husband. I could break his jaw. You know, I could really make things difficult for him. Instead, I talk. And I say, oh, I love to see you guys close. Come on, kiss him. Say, oh, yeah, I know you can suck dick deeper than that, honey. Come on, I've seen you do better than that. Let's go. And say, God, you guys look great together. That completely takes away all of that new guy's fears. He doesn't have to worry whether or not things are going to go wrong. They're already going great. He's being encouraged for playing with this really sexy man, and that I'm going to join in, and we're going to have fun. But first, I have to make sure that the ball is rolling, that things are going in a really good direction, that in a way that work for everybody. I take ownership of every play situation. That's what makes me a really good top. I make sure that nobody has any doubt which direction we're going, because this is what I call the okie-dokie reaction. All right, it's time for us to do this. Okie-dokie. Well, yeah, it's that simple. It truly, truly is. And I have practiced that probably 300 times. Easily. And it never fails. People hear about how things go terribly wrong and they go, you know, off into the weeds and burst into flames and, oh, I'm never going to do that again. Why? Because people are distrusting the luck. It doesn't work that way. You have to be responsible, not as in a burden, not as a chore, not as an obligation, not as a gun to the head, but because it's joyful, because you get to call the shots. You get to set the tune. And everybody profits, and everybody goes, God, that was great. Man, I want to go back. Well, that's part of being a really good top. Because when you take ownership for how things go, it's not a burden. It means that everybody trusts you, everybody likes you, everybody wants to be around you. They say, this guy's got credibility. He promised something, and that's what showed up. I'm not talking a lot about technique, really. I'm mostly going into philosophy, but that is a large amount of what it takes to be a really good sir. That goes all the way up into being a good master, okay? Not just party host, but master. I'm instructing, not because it's an obligation or because I feel that I should, but because this is great. Gary? See what I just did? Illustrated my point. I wanted water. I signaled to him. He knew what was expected, and he runs to go do it because he is a good, good bottom. That gets rewarded. He's earning boy points. Okay? Was it a burden for me? No. He's getting his goodies, I'm getting my goodies. Everybody benefits, the level of civilization rises in the world. Very good. He's not doing it for a thank you. He knows there's a payoff. He knows there's a payoff at some point. The reason why this is important is that there are people who are into being of service. So let's have a show of hands. How many people here at some point have fantasized about being in service in the way that I just described? Raise your hand. Okay, very good. So let's talk about that, please.
Start with somebody else.
All right. Who else? Of service. Who's into being of service? Okay.
Pleasing a master, pleasing someone that you want to become close to you.
Very good. Thank you. Who else? Did you have your hand up? Please.
Your cap from Butchman's Academy. I attended that one weekend over in Phoenix. And for the weekend, I took the role of yes. Slave to serve because I largely had not experienced that. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a learning experience. I learned I am not a slave. Mm-hmm. I am not a master. I am a switch.
There you go. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful understanding of yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, the next Butchman's is coming up in 2.5 weeks, like the weekend of the 15th and the 16th or something. And if you're serious about going to that, there's a lot of people who are going to be ride-sharing and lodging sharing. So who else had their hand up? Very good. Kim.
Yeah. I think to me that was the first thing that attracted me to the kind of the whole dynamic was just the idea of kind of serving with a certain amount of grace or elegance, comportment, that there is a beauty to the yielding to someone else's domination that I just find very attractive and very erotic. Mm-hmm.
And there is a need for that. And based on the show of hands that we had just a little while ago, there's plenty of guys who would be willing to take that job on. Yes. You know. So who else? Being in service. Okay.
Well, I need a minute to kind of figure it out in my head. But I guess for me, I've always done things, you know, to be in service of others on one level or another. But this was just a whole different way of doing that where it was much more intense and it had a whole different level of intensity, and there's definitely sexuality involved there, and that adds a whole new level of fun to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Someone else? Yes, please.
I'd like to point out that that's a symbiotic relationship, and being a master or a sir is in itself its own way of serving the needs of a boy. So, because God knows I'm fucking exhausted when he goes home. Mm-hmm. Like the dead.
Mm-hmm. Very good. One of the things that I do, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I'm going to repeat myself. There's your glasses, Gary.
Oh, thank you.
In play, in the process of playing with somebody, I understand that in order for the flow, the power flow to occur, one, somebody has to take responsibility. Two, there has to be pure information that is trustworthy. It has to be credible information. If it doesn't show up as real for you, don't fucking say it. If you're not in the right mood, don't pretend. If you'd rather go cuddle, cuddle. If it's not working for you, just say, you know, this isn't working. Can we just, you know, let's do coffee or something. The reason why is because you want to make sure that when you are fully intentional, when you are really in the mood, that you go for it fully. But it doesn't mean you have to be that guy all the time. Nobody can be at 100% every damn time. It's okay. Let yourself off the hook. We talked about that last week. It's okay. Just be real, be true, and that's what speaks for your character. If people can tell there's something that's not right and you're not telling them, that's what they're taking away. Like, I don't know what was really going on there, and I wish he trusted me enough to tell me. Okay, that also goes in the other direction. Not everybody's as fully as self-expressed as I am. I mean, I accept that. So what I will do is that I will use different techniques to tease feedback from people. As you guys know about me, many of you, if I'm flogging somebody for the first time, which happens a lot because my specialty is beginners, then I will calibrate, as I call it. I'll say, on a scale of 0 to 10, where are we now? And I'll say 3 or 4 or 5 or 8 or whatever it is. That's good information. A new top, a guy who is still getting in touch with his inner sir, one of the things that I say is the feedback that you need is you make sure that before he goes to sleep that he will give you a full email giving all details of what happened as if you weren't there. You know, treat him, you know, have him write it as if he was writing it to his best friend, saying what happened, saying what he liked, what he didn't like, and why. The reason why is because we're teaching people to be more fully self-expressed, because communication has to be clean, it has to be complete. If someone disappears on us, if someone goes south, which has happened to me, you know, and I'm rather touchy on the topic, but if somebody stops giving me useful information, it dismays the hell out of me. because I need constant feedback in order to do what I'm doing. I'm a problem solver by nature. If something's not going right, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it right. It's just my nature. It's what I do for a living. It's how I live my life. But there has to be a two-way flow at all times. And constantly maintaining that flow really is everybody's responsibility. And so now I'm going to talk to the bottoms in the room. Now, I've talked a little bit about this before. I covered it way too much last week. But again, we never run out of a need to point this out. The more feedback that you give, the stiffer the dick on the top. Someone who just lays there like a dead fish. In vaudeville, used to be called a lox. You know, they show up on stage like a dead fish. You know, L-O-X, like salmon. Yeah. I've got a whole bunch of play pictures in my iPad, my iPhone, of me flogging various guys. And one of the worst experiences I've ever had playing with somebody is in one of those pictures. And someone who looks at the pictures will go, oh my God, this has got to be the sexiest thing ever. It was excruciating. He had an attitude. He didn't want to be there. He was unhappy. He did not like what was going on, but he felt obligated because the Eagle had brought him in as a stud for stud night. But that was the last place on earth he wanted to be. And he was obligated to be flogged by me. And I did everything I could to put him at his ease. I did everything I could to make him joyful and glad that he was there, and he wasn't buying it. And I really would rather have not done that in retrospect. But, you know, I gave it all my all. But I'm very clear I'll never play with him again unless he comes to me and makes it very plain that it's not going to be that way in the future. Because being as sensitive as I am, and I am sensitive, I'm a sensitive big top. I have no shame about that at all. I have insecurities like anybody else. I have history like anybody else. I have damage from the old days. I have all sorts of noise in my head like any human being. I don't want to give the impression I'm Mr. Perfection. I'm not. I've got any number of cocky stories like the one I did earlier about the cult model that make me look good. But I have many more stories that don't make me look so good. And somehow or another, you never get around to hearing those, do you? But I'm here to tell you that I have just as many failings as any man in this room. And I have no shame about that. I'm not hiding it. I'm not pretending. I'm not living in an act. And that actually helps me because I'm okay with that. I'm not looking to be Mr. Perfection because I'm clearly not. I mean, I could list more flaws, you know, that pertain to me than anybody here in this room could find. But the fact of the matter is that I'm okay with myself, flaws and all. And that encourages other people to accept you too. The more you are just present with people, the more that you are just, you get over yourself. I get pissy, I get petty, I get moody, but we have to let go of that. And that's what makes us human and gets us back into closeness with other people. By taking responsibility for how we behave, good or bad, flaws and all, that frees us so that when we are in the mood to be the cock of the walk, to be the man that everybody else wishes that they were, then that's because we're being fully in the moment and fully, fully self-expressed. The way that I say it is if I'm wearing full-on gear, I'm going to allow the beast to walk the streets. So with that thought, let's open it up to discussion. Anybody have any thoughts, any concerns, any questions, any feedback? Because we have more.
Well, I had a question.
Ask.
Being someone who's been flogged by you, and I enjoy the experience, but I'm not very verbose or don't make a huge amount of reaction when I'm being flogged.
You're so precocious. You're covering our next topic
already. Okay.
Good. Very good.
Okay.
Please, Gary.
Being someone who enjoys it so much, I'm almost feel like I'm doing something wrong for all these people who are expecting all of the noises to come out. And to me, it's just sheer pleasure, or to that someone one night who walked in front of the cross when I was being flogged and said, "You're absolutely smiling." Mm-hmm. And I said it felt wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I almost feel like, and I've asked you before, should I be making more noise?
And as I've told you before, there are no shoulds.
No.
Yeah. Anybody that says you should is not somebody you should be listening to. The reason why is because how you show up is the way we should be loving you, really. Because I've played with a lot of people. I'm going to bring up Hamburger Harold. That was the nickname I gave to him. Harold was a dear friend and one of my favorite playmates. And after I would be done whipping him with the single tail, we would have to scrub the walls because of all the blood spatter. Because he could immediately convert pain into intense pleasure. I could be whipping him. I mean, he had calluses. He had so much on his, so many scars on his back. But his joy is he would hum and he would just kind of dance from one foot to the other while we just went for it. I had a lot of fun with that. But God help us if CSI ever showed up on the scene. But see, that's his reaction. I didn't make him wrong for it. He happened to find a playmate that found it to be very fun. It's not something I seek out, but I liked the fact that he was totally into it in his own way. Every man in this room reacts in his own way, and there are no shoulds. Speaking as somebody who works almost exclusively with beginners, I got to tell you, that covers the full range. So then now we're going to segue into the next topic, which is nonverbal communication during play. Now I'm going to use the topic of flogging, but this applies to caning. This applies to hot wax. This applies to all sorts of different stuff. If we've got somebody tied up and gagged, and you know we've established rules of comportment. Pardon me while I scratch the equipment there for a second. It's a wool kilt. What can I do? You know. Yeah, really.
Makes it
wax. Yes, makes it wand. It wants. Yes, yes. Anyways, how do we read somebody? Because there has to be some form of communication. I mean, I'm sure that there are tops out there that will tell you, there's no need for communication. I'm there to inflict. That's a different top at a different circumstance in a different place. That's not me. I'm feedback-oriented, so I'm going to have that bias. I'm not disapproval-based, I'm approval-based. Ooh, good for you. I'm glad you're doing that. That makes me happy. Okay, fine, that's me. Not everybody's that way. There are people who are looking to be abused, literally, because that was the only interaction that they had with their father. They're looking for a repeat of that because that's the only time they feel really complete and loved. That's fine. I'm not that top for that. That's okay. But for me personally, what I do when I'm playing with somebody, Gary, stand up, face the wall. Very good. If I'm flogging Gary, Gary does tend to be stoic. My favorite thing is to make him be non-stoic. He has a very, very high threshold. Well, Gary is a lot of fun because of that. He's a good challenge. It's no trouble at all for Gary to wear out four tops in a row if we're flogging him. And he has a little bit of pride in that, don't you, Gary?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Well, it pisses off the tops, and one of my favorite things that I love to teach the other tops is how to break his will, how to get through. Because the thing about the stoic guys, the high threshold pain pigs, is that getting them to give feedback can actually be a very joyful thing, okay? If somebody's doing it because they feel that they have to, the first thing I do is I disabuse them of that information. I say, no, I actually like feedback. If you want to make me a happy top, let me know. Now, some people give it in different ways. Some people bunch up their upper back muscles. Some people, they start breathing real hard. Other people start shifting around in position. Other people, whatever. If their behavior changes in some way, you're getting through to them. What you have to worry about is it too much? Okay. Now, I don't have any of the dry markers here, dry erased markers. But, again, if I'm playing with somebody, the way that I do it as a really good top, okay, I'm bragging here, but I'm pretty legendary for my flogging techniques, is that think of a chart. I'm going to draw it up here, remain in position. Okay, if I'm playing with somebody, I build it up, and then I check in on them. Then I build it up, and I check in on them. I build it up, I check in on them. Because if somebody is being stoic, I have to know where we're at. Because if he's feeling abused, if he's feeling wronged, if he's feeling like this is a nightmare scenario, but he's going to struggle through it, I'm not going to like that any more than he is, okay? But if I check in on him and say, how you doing? You know, what's going on? You know, I'll check his hands, make sure that his, you know, if his hands have been above his heart for too long, the circulation may make his hands cold. I'm going to let him put his arms down and take a break for a little while, and then we're going to go back to it, whatever. But if I'm taking the time to make sure that I'm getting the information that I want, I'm going to be able to zero in on him, because he's different from you, from you, from you, from you, from everybody. You're all different from each other. You all have different thresholds. You have different ways of expressing yourself. It's my job as an observant top to figure that out. This is what I call non-pass or fail questions. If I'm playing with somebody for the first time, I ask them a lot of questions. I'm very nosy. The reason why is that that's information I can use. If I'm going to take, let's say this is the first time that we're playing, but it's going to be a lot more times that we're going to be playing as time goes by, because he really, really gets my motor running, then I'm going to take the time to find out things. Okay, go ahead and have a seat. Let's hear it for Gary.
No problem. Yes. I must tell everybody here, everyone who Papa Tony is how to be a top, as be a flogger, they've all learned that they need to interact with the person to ask, are you enjoying it or you're not enjoying it? Is it too heavy? And I think everybody here needs to be commended. Or Papa Tony needs to be commended in the way, well, Papa Tony needs to be commended.
He got lost in the pleasure of the thought. Yeah,
Papa
go ahead.
Tony needs to be commended in the way he has taught everybody here to flog, who is a flogger and not a floggy.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Move over to Singleton.
Really? Perhaps you'd like, yeah, well.
This weekend.
Saturday? What time?
He's ready. He's ready to take on the next level. The way that I can get past Gary's stoicism is that we go from thud, which he can take for hours, into sting. Now, in order for there to be sting, there has to be a very narrow area being hit. Okay, not big and wide and soft and thuddy. And not everybody is into that. Maybe about 5% of people are into sting. But if they're into sting, they're into sting in a big way. And Timothy, you're smiling. What would you like to share on the topic?
Well, I was going to say, getting into sting, I've been playing with this one and exploring. He's really, really new. And when you talk nonverbal communication, it's like when I'm caning, I'll typically wear one leather glove if I'm going to wear them, so that I can keep one hand on the chest. I think our third time that we were playing, I was caning poor Joe, and I was caning him on the head really, really, really strongly. And as I was working the front of his face, this is why you have to keep really good control and know what's going on. He had a vasovagal reaction and he passed out. And he just slowly went to his knees and went down and then came popping back. So we moved to another, but it's one of those things that can go really bad really fast. You don't know when that's really going to happen. And, you know, 1 minute you're very lightly, you know, caning somebody's face. and the next, you're making sure that they can thrash comfortably when they come back to themselves. So, but it's really important to always keep, I always try to keep one hand on the body so that I can read nonverbal cues, because a lot of times people just, you know, it's the same way. I don't make any noise at all when I'm being pleasured. I don't. And I'm one of those really stoic sort of guys, but you got to be very careful about that, because it can go really bad. You need to be aware of what's going on. You need to be able to, you know, make somebody sure somebody is going to drop, that they make it safely to the ground with no injuries and have a safe, comforting space to come back into.
I find that if I'm going to be doing something with somebody that intense, I like to have them laying down. That, yes, there are restraints you can have where, you know, they can collapse in it, but you have to have quick releases for those, which cost extra. Not everybody has those. Not everybody has hooks in the ceiling or a St. Andrew's cross. So I find that just having them lay down while I do stuff to them is very nice too, because some techniques intentionally cause people to black out, not from shock, not from pain, but just going so deep into endorphination that they just conk out, and it's like the most blissful space you could ever imagine. So that, you know, if they're laying flat, it's a lot easier to get to that place. They teach one of those techniques at the Butchman's Academy that's coming up in 2.5 weeks, which is where I learned it, because I had no idea. I'm sure there's something that I have not covered for tonight that was already on the agenda. You know, we've talked about all sorts of different stuff here. Yeah, covered a lot. No, those are the sunglasses, but thank you.
Oh, here. Yeah.
This is only the second one. We have a lot more to cover, a lot. I can't even begin to tell you how much more we've got to cover. We're going to be doing field trips out to La Mesa, out to Scotty and Doran's periodically, like, say, Saturday afternoon, to practice things together, out in the sunshine together as brothers. I used to do this all the time, and it's a hoot. It's absolutely wonderful. We'll have lots of toys. We'll have lots of different things we're going to be teaching. We can't demonstrate here. It's just not something we can do here. We can do it at the bar. We do this first and third Tuesday of each month, which means this Tuesday, 7 o'clock at the Eagle, we will be demonstrating different things. I will be handing out data DVDs that are very desirable. I'm making lots and lots of copies of them for that. These are the two Naughty Boys videos. So you guys have gotten them. Tell us about the videos, please.
Well, they've been nice, and I have a nice practice partner here, so, you know, and it was a little sloppy at first, and oh, this just fell right off, and oh, let's try again, but that was okay, and we started with the basic, I think the harnesses are easy to start with, there's not a lot of knots in it, so it's mostly just wrapping and over and under, and not a lot of tying, and that was easy, and so I got a little practice and practiced some more last Tuesday on Brent, which was nice. And yeah, I'm still practicing and learning and getting better, but it's useful. It's they're instructional, but you have to stop it. You go, whoa, what just happened, right? Like there's this, they'll do this thing and you go, whoa, how did you get there? So then you got to back it up, play it again. Do it, okay, I think now it's like this. And so, you know, but it takes practice and it's helpful. I've learned a lot from this.
Thank you. So. What we're talking about is two T-W-O, naughty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, boys. You can Google it. The problem is that these are all free videos that you can download, but they're all in Flash video format. So I took the time, they're all free, so I downloaded them and converted them to a format that plays perfectly on Android and iPhone and iPad and, you know, anything. So that you can play it and then go, whoa, whoa, and rewind a little bit and say, oh, there's where I screwed up. There's 220 instructional videos on there. Not all of them are all that great. You don't have to learn all of them. But if you pick one, the example that I give is Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris knows one thing really, really well, you know, the spinning back kick. And that's what he basically based his main career on. But he's really good at the spinning back kick. So you don't have to know 220 different techniques. You just need to know one good one. So what's the benefit? At the very least, if you want to be a popular top, you get yourself some rope and you learn how to do one of these particular bondage techniques. Ron, would you care to tell us about the butterfly sleeve? Or what is it? The
dragonfly
sleeve.
It's a tie that basically arms are behind the person, and it looks like a dragonfly's tail. It's just looped all the way down, and then you can do any intricate design up from the legs and the front. And there's an alternate, well, it's not an alternate, it actually is more intense. It's called a lobster. That person does have to be laying down because it's the entire body, head to foot.
No.
And your legs are up.
So what's the...
Yeah.
So let's talk about the practicality of why would we care? Because any top that shows up, let's say at the harness party with some rope, And he goes to some cute guy that he finds is real sexy and says, here, let me put a harness on you. Really? And you put it on him. And what that guy does is he'll go around and show every person in the bar, check me out. I'm the real thing. I'm a heavy player. Check it out. It's a huge status thing. I mean, it's a huge status thing. And it makes you very popular. Then you undo it and you do the next boy. Well, it's a really nice thing from a show standpoint, but it's also very, very nice from a play standpoint. Because there are plenty of people who like being tied up during play. I mean, I'm a witness. There's a lot of very fun things you can do with somebody, and we'll talk more about that in future. But I would strongly suggest that this next Wednesday that you show up, because I will be giving away free copies of these Data DVDs for anybody who wants them, because these are useful. Who else has gotten a copy and liked it? There you go. There you go. What, you never got a copy? Well, I've been mad at you, you know. Right. But see, everybody should have this, you know. I mean, if nothing else, just to give your top something to learn about. Because in the modern age, that is one of the few things we can learn really, really well through the modern digital technology. Bondage is easy to learn when you can rewind. If somebody comes in here and teaches something, 5 minutes after it, you're going to go, was that under or over? Versus with this, it's permanent, it's free, it's with you all the time, and you can refer to it anytime you want. It's really nice. And then it's just playtime. So, you know, this next week I will be bringing in those discs. We have lots and lots of different things that we're going to be covering. I'm not really sure exactly how the structure is going to go. I'm kind of making this up as I go along. I hope you guys forgive me for wandering so much. I tend to do that. I tend to go off topic. I tend to repeat myself. I tend to drift off. It's never intentional. But the reason why I'm doing this is because what I've observed is that it works. I mean, there's a lot of you guys in this room that have gotten personal coaching from me. I want this to spread. Whatever it is that you learn, any way from anybody, share it. Pass it on. Please, the reason why is because you might notice, especially this weekend, you're going to see a lot of people you haven't seen out very much at the big movie night and all that other stuff. You're going to see a lot of people, a lot of people. It is a culture that is based upon joy, and it wasn't for a long time. Everybody here belongs in that culture, without exception. Every one of us is worthy now. Every one of us is valuable now, the way that we show up. The reason why I give these talks is because what I share is something that other people can then pass on along with their own wisdom, and it builds up from there. That is the thing that we lost when everybody did so much dying, is we didn't have enough of these kind of topics of discussion. Yes, we've had instructional things where they say, this is how you tie somebody up in this way, or this is how you cane somebody, and that's good. I want to cover the larger topic. That's what this is going to continue being week after week until we all get really, really thoroughly sick of it, is how to be a successful sir, how to be a respectable man of the community that everybody is really damn glad you showed up. That's the intention here. We're not just going to talk about technique. I'm going to be speaking in parables. I'm going to be illustrating points with various things. You've seen my style. If this suits you, please keep coming back and bring your friends, because I have learned over the decades with all the men that I have mentored is that this really does work. It does cause people to relax more. And when people are more relaxed, they're more likely to be proud of themselves. When you see somebody in the bar with a flogger in their hand, and they got flames coming out of their nostrils, and they're like, fuck yeah. I mean, who wouldn't rejoice to see that and say, me next. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for more men being joyfully, fully self-expressed, and damn glad that they're kinky sons of bitches. So with that thought, thank you, gentlemen.